All right, happy spring to everyone. Hopefully everyone is enjoying the sporadic and crazy weather that I know Charlie and I are also experiencing. So with that, Charlie, thank you so much for joining for episode 26.
I'm excited to be here. This is so great. I love this podcast. I just love doing this. This is great. It's true.
I do too.
Well, because there's so much great feedback, and then we get to have these good conversations that are just so needed in education and the world.
It's okay. You can say it's because you enjoy spending time with me. It's okay to say that in front of everyone, Charlie.
It is. I think everyone knows that by now. It's great.
Well, what also is exciting, Charlie, is that you just saw that we are going to have the language of behavior part of the curriculum for Fort Hays State University and their teachers that are, you know, getting licensed. And so that's super fun that they get to experience that. But also, I know we've been getting a lot of traction with our book study. So we share a little bit about what was constructed for the language of behavior and hopefully what other universities are going to be using in the future.
Yeah, but we want this to be easy for people to use, easy for discussion, easy to start the discussion, because educators are busy. Instructors are busy, and we all have so much work to do. So we wanted to make it easy. We created questions to get the conversation going. We created even email templates so that you can invite people easily. We gave you a whole facilitator kit with worksheets and everything in there. So it's just so easy. It's absolutely free. If you're going to use our book, we want you to have something to go along with it to make it really valuable. So the kit is free. And Josh, can you tell everyone where to get that?
Yeah, if they head over to joshsamper.com, Language of Behavior, and even if you just go to the main page, you can see the tab Language of Behavior. Obviously, we're going to have the podcast there, but we also have the free book study. We have free resources, services that Charlie and I provide in regards to speaking, how we support schools. So really, that's kind of a hub for us, but we also have the book study there for you. So just make sure that you're heading over there. I'll make sure that the link is in the show notes to make it super easy for everyone. And that'll go directly to the free book study. And that way you don't have to search in all of that. But if you want to learn more about all the things that Charlie and I do, that'll be there for you. All right. Charlie, you had talked about just loving the fact that this podcast gets to support folks. We got another listener question. So if you're ready, I was going to throw it out to you.
Go for it.
Okay. I was pausing because the pronunciation may be tricky on this. So I'm going to apologize prior to. So this is Aisha Wojtowicz. And so the question is, what's the best strategy for a student that just shuts down? And they're asking whether it's like a cognitive overload or just like a refusal to work. They're probably wondering, because there is obviously an underlying to the behavior, and we may not know the reasoning for that. But for you, what's the first thing that comes up in regards to strategies for the student that shuts down?
Yeah, it's always to think about it as a stress response in the body. Think of it as a physiological response to the emotions behind it. It's not defiance. If we look at it like that, now it's hard because it presents as defiance often. But again, just look at the behavior. So it could be daydreaming. So that could be defiance, is that they're not paying attention to your stuff, or outright refusal. It could look like apathy. It could be completely withdrawing or putting the hood over, you know, over their head, putting their head down. So oftentimes it looks like it's oppositional, but when you talk to these kids, they're like, you know, I didn't even know what to do. I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just trying to deal with what I was feeling. I mean, in so many words, that's what they're saying when they're talking with me in therapy sessions. And so we just need to think of this as a physiological response. Like, they're literally flooded by cognitive or emotional demands in their brain that goes through their nervous system. It starts in the limbic system, where your emotions are regulated, and that overrides the executive functioning that's at the prefrontal cortex of your brain, and any of kind of the connections in your brains that are doing the thinking or planning or problem solving or rationalization. So it's like demand avoidance, if you think of it like that, or executive dysfunction, you could think of it like that. Some people who have studied this would call it that. Sometimes you hear emotional numbing. Those are all common, especially when they have trauma histories, which oftentimes when this happens, it's linked to trauma, not always, but also if you just look at it as a stress response system, we can humanize them from there, shift the way that we're going to respond.
Yeah, I love it. It really is. The brain's so complex, and this is an outlier option, but I know that, you know, for some folks too, it is like that shutdown, and it is like kind of a flight response for the trauma piece. But also, I've had a student where they would shut down, teacher got really, really frustrated, and we found out eventually was that the student was actually having many seizures. And that was his brain caused by stress. It was caused by a major stress that occurred in the hallway, in the cafeteria, in the classroom. It was what we found out later was it was happening all the time. And it was for short periods of time. But, you know, the teacher was thinking, trying to avoid them or not do the work or hates the class. I mean, there were a lot of things that were drawn from this situation that were negative as far as the underlying to the behavior. But really, it was his brain literally was restarting over and over throughout the day due to stress. So I know that, again, is probably a small percentage of things, but I mean, there are so many things that occur within our students that we don't even realize. And it does take some investigation to get to the bottom of what's going on.
It does. I mean, and that's the thing. If we can put ourselves aside for a minute and just step outside of ourselves and just think of who's in front of us and what's going on there, that's really helpful. We could also use co-regulation and not confront, co-regulate with them instead. I mean, this could be about, like, even before we try to re-engage them, we could just try to sit with them, just let them know that you're side by side with them and just, I'm here. Like, you don't have to talk. You could even say, you don't have to say anything. I'm here with you until you can find a calm. You could sometimes, the way you use your voice is really effective. If you can keep your voice very low and steady, it's predictable. If we raise our voice and get all blah, 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 it's not predictable. And so it feels very unsafe. It keeps our system offline. So we just sit there with them. Again, I saw this really great picture. You might have seen it, Josh, before, about this little kid. They're just laying flat on the ground on their stomach, and a police officer is laying down flat on their stomach right next to them. And to me, it gets me every single time, because that is co-regulation. That's saying, I know something's up. I'm here with you. I'm not trying to fix you. And so something like that is just, it's so profound when people know that there's not, they're just kind of with you in it. So I really like that. And it does support, like, the grounding. You can do a technique like that. The regulation supports how we respond and understand that they're just offline.
Yeah. And that kind of goes in terms with some of the things that we've talked about in the book too, with consider your environment and having a safe space constructed so that they don't even have to exit the classroom. They might have somewhere that they can go within. And I know everyone's classroom looks different, and obviously, even that space looks different. I've seen teachers build something in a variety of different ways to help that regulation piece. I think this is the thing that's frustrating, is teachers are wanting to move forward in the curriculum, which makes complete sense. As you and I know, as former teachers, like, that's a real thing. Like, we have a timeline. We need to get this unit done. We need to move on to the next thing. And when a student is in this space where they need maybe 30 minutes to get themselves back on track, to then send them out, and if there's frequency to that, then you feel like the student's never in my classroom and they're super behind. So what are some strategies that you can think of in the classroom to help keep them there, but then also feeling safe and helpful as far as the regulation piece to get them back into the learning?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about them disengaging, that sometimes, I mean, there's nothing to that. It's really that they're putting their heads down, or sometimes teachers will say, well, they were doodling or they're coloring, and so that way they just shut down. And I said, actually, they're probably focusing. It's actually helping them regulate so that they can pay attention to you. So just knowing that, how we're labeling it, is important. If they are daydreaming, there's just so many things. So we need to understand about, like, what that looks like. When it looks scary to us, they're shutting down, that's usually more outward. And so teachers don't usually explain it like that. They usually say they're shutting down. They look apathetic. They're not engaging. And so when I think of that, I think sometimes you can just let them do that. Just kind of let them do that for that class period or for that short period of time where you're teaching. Just notice it. And then you can go back to them. Depends on the kid. It depends on the pattern. If there's a pattern of this happening, okay, well, let's observe that. I always like to say, just jot down some of the observations you're making. Try to notice the time of day. It depends if you're elementary or middle level or high school level, but just kind of notice, has there been a shift in their life? Tell you something recently has happened. Sometimes kiddos will come in and say, yeah, my grandfather's in the hospital. And so if they come in the next day and they put their head down on their desk while I was teaching, I thought, oh, I wonder if they were up late. I wonder if they're at the hospital late. I mean, you just don't know. So again, look for the patterns of behavior, but then also, if it's not a pattern, if it's just that class period, just let them do that for a little bit so that you can revisit them later. I mean, not everything a kid does has to be labeled as bad, apathetic, they don't care, they're being rude. It doesn't have to be labeled that way. So maybe that's the way we need to frame this, is just be careful how we label it first.
Yeah, it's back to that curiosity piece, understanding what's really going on before we start to make assumptions about what the behavior truly is. And it's hard. And it's really hard not to take things personal, especially when you're seeing that child every single day for 9 months. Yeah. It really is hard. You know, I'm talking through experience of all the teachers that I've worked with is they obviously want to make an impact on the child, a positive impact. They want to have a good relationship with them. And they also want them to learn. And so when you're pouring yourself into this, and then that is what's being reciprocated, it's hard to put it away on the side here and say, okay, I'm going to take some time versus they're doing it to me and they don't like me, or they don't like my class, or they don't like the subject matter, and taking it more that way.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because guess what? They may not like you. I mean, certainly not all the students that I taught liked me. I mean, come on. And that's okay. So who does that go back to? Me. It goes back to us. Every single time. And I also will say this, just kind of check yourself, give yourself a little check, like, oh, am I personalizing this? Because there's a lot of kids that I teach and not everyone is going to like me or be in tune with me. I can't attune to all kids all the time at the same time. I'm sometimes tired or overwhelmed or whatever. So it's okay. I mean, I always like to say we need to check in with our own mental health and well-being before we can start attuning to others anyway. And so oftentimes that's just it. Sometimes you're just offline. And so sneak in those little things that we can do in our everyday practice, those rapid resets. I love them because you can do a reset of the energy and starting with your own energy. So here's the other thing, Josh, it always comes back to this, is about the reconnection. We got to connect. And I will also say we can't always connect with every single kid either. So I'm just giving you permission that we give a lot of these examples about connection and creating safety and all of that. And sometimes we don't feel safe, or sometimes we don't feel like connecting at that time. And I'm going to give you space not to have to feel like you have to do that. But also just think of the overview. Like kids know if you truly care about them, not because the one time you said you did, but because of over time, you're truly creating that space. That's why they're so forgiving. If you're offline, they'll catch you. They'll be like, what's going on with you today, Mrs. Pack? What's going on? And so they'll give you that space. They won't give you the attitude. Or if they give you the attitude and you challenge them on that with that look or that tone of voice that changes, like your firm voice, they'll snap back out of it. And so again, just keeping these things in mind. But really, one of the things I find we do a lot is we ask a lot of questions. We don't often allow them to process and then respond to one question at a time. And our tone absolutely matters. So when I'm thinking of all of these things, it really does come back to us. I mean, it does every time. If we need to write one more book, Josh, it's going to be like one page and it just says, just check yourself. Like, just check yourself, because you influence others, or you get to decide how you think about something, which leads to how you feel about something. And then it's connected to our actions, which is, by the way, cognitive behavioral therapy right there.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. Well, first off, I'm ready to write a book with you again at any point, Charlie, because it's such a phenomenal experience. But two, I think what you said there was so important. I can think of many times where having to take a student out of that environment because it was just like rapid fire question, where the student already was dysregulated, couldn't get a thought otherwise, didn't understand the emotions that were going through their mind and how their body was reacting to that, let alone answer a simple question. And so, you know, just even taking them out of that environment, giving them space to get themselves regulated, and then giving them space to do that was, I've always felt, was extremely powerful. And there was other ways to do that too, to kickstart that. I always found like taking them outside helped get that quicker. Getting them out of the fluorescent lights, the AC unit filtering the same air through over and over and over again, the white walls of confinement. I think there's a lot of things that seem restricting in a lot of hallways and school buildings in general. And so just get them in natural light, fresh air, in the grass. Like, I just felt like right away, it just changed their body language. It got them regulated quicker. You know, even if it's a teacher able to take out their kids and do an outdoor lesson, that's going to make a huge difference to your class period, even just improving their mental health for a short period, because they don't get that, you know, being inside for 8 hours, it really does take a toll on a kid.
It does. And I remember thinking when I was just starting out teaching, I thought, I'm going to do all of those things. I'm going to be that teacher that take them outside. I'm going to take them to all of those things and essentially just do a complete circus act for them all the time. And we're human and we can't actually do that all the time, which I know you're not saying.
Not all the time.
The thing is, they're bored. Oftentimes our kids are bored. I mean, sometimes we get bored too. And they do, like, education isn't set up for the environment for them to learn effectively, and especially with what we're learning about how their brain is changing and adapting to the way social media and technology is working their brain. I don't think we'll have enough information yet to even decide what that looks like and how it's affecting them, but we know it is. And so, you know, we can wait for the system to change, or we can decide that, you know, sometimes I'm in the middle of teaching and I might sound boring to them. So I can shift it a little bit. I don't have to do a lot. I don't have to be dancing for them. I can just shift it with the, that's why I love those rapid resets. Or just say, okay, I notice everybody, just call it out. All right, I notice you all look a little bored. What's going on? Or we don't want to set ourselves up for critique either, because they will absolutely complain and point all your flaws out at that moment too. I've done that. I've done it. Or just, you know, that's when you have a little bag of tricks. Like, I always love the pipe cleaners. I would say, okay, we're going to pass out the pipe cleaners right now, and everybody put it in the form of your name or relate it back to what you're doing. What do you think it would look like if the pioneers were building a new home? Put that in the shape or whatever you're doing. So things like that can be incorporated very cheaply, very easily, and it might help you because sometimes you get bored teaching. So we're all human. Let's just call that out sometimes. It doesn't have to be perfect. Sure. Yeah. It doesn't always have to be a clinical answer. But I have to catch myself a lot, Josh. I make everything like they have trauma. You know, they're really struggling. Well, sometimes they're just bored. They don't like what they're learning, or they're thinking about the dance or graduation, whatever.
Yeah. And it goes back to stress or overload, or I mean, a lot of our kids are in so many different things. It's not just school, right? They're in athletics, they're in band, they're in dance. I mean, there's so many other things that they're a part of where they're on overload, and every little thing just kind of adds to the plate of what's going on with them in their lives. And a lot of times that's what we see in the classroom, is that it's all those things compressed. And it's just like our teachers, as you were saying, our adults too. There's a lot going on in their home life, and they're having to compartmentalize that so that they're not letting that overflow. But that's hard to do. And sometimes, you know, our behaviors and the ways that we react is due to the fact that it's not really the kid in front of us. It's due to the things that are going on outside of our lives and outside of the school.
That is an excellent point. It's so true.
Yes, trauma is definitely there for our kids, but there's also a lot of other factors, and we have to make sure that we're finding the language to that behavior. So with that, I just want to shout out a few things. First off, thank you for the listener question. If you're listening and maybe this spawned another question that you have, we've tried to make it as easy as possible by creating a bit.ly for you. So if you head over to bit.ly/LOB questions, which will be in the show notes for you, click on that and you can submit your question for a future episode. And we just really thank everyone that has done that so far for this podcast. And then I threw this up earlier, but this is Charlie's website. She's got so much wonderful content on there. So head over to thrivingeducator.org to find more. Make sure that you're signing up for her newsletter. And then as far as what I was talking about earlier with the book study kit, joshdanver.com/language of behavior will be there for you in the show notes also, so that you can get those free resources. Is there anything else that you can think of that we need to shout out before we end the episode?
Yeah, I just want people to remember, just, you can always just slow down, listen with empathy. So empathetic listening, and let it be an opportunity to figure it out with them. Like, what helped you come back online when you did? Or what can we do next time when you start feeling this way?
Love it.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.